Welcome to a one-hour election edition of Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. Between now and the May 16th election, I am interviewing candidates in local races in Clatsop County. In the studio today is Port Commissioner Jim Campbell, the incumbent in position one. He is being challenged by Commissioner Stephen Fulton, who has held position two, has switched spots, and is running against Campbell. But first, a bit of background about the Port. The Port District covers the entire county, and with an annual budget of nearly $60 million, manages the Port itself on Astoria's west end, two mooring basins in Astoria, the Tongue Point Industrial Area on Astoria's east end, and the Astoria Regional Airport in Warrenton. In addition to choosing three Port Commissioners in May, voters also will decide the fate of a nearly $2 million bond measure on the May 16th ballot. And because the district is countywide, all registered voters in the county can cast ballots in the three Port Commission races, as well as the bond measure. Jim has served on the Port Commission most recently since 2013 and previously in the 1960s and 1970s. He also serves on the Port Budget Committee, as do the other commissioners. He is a private pilot and the owner of Campbell Towing and Marine Construction in Astoria. This interview was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Jim.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Now, a word about the format for the first half of the Port interviews today. In interviews that have already aired with candidates in the other two contested races, they agreed to sit down side by side and be interviewed together. Jim, you did not agree to do that, so we are going to have the interviews conducted separately with you and Mr. Fulton. I'd like to start by having you explain why you were unwilling to sit next to Steve and discuss the issues with him directly.
Well, I didn't feel it was productive for either candidate or for the public.
Could you say a little bit more about why?
Why? I think we can answer the question direct without being interrupted and get into a debate that doesn't mean anything.
Did you feel that he wouldn't allow you to answer questions?
That's been the history.
At Port Commission meetings?
At the meetings, yes.
Okay. Now, could critics use that against you and state that if you can't face your opponent directly, you really can't handle the inevitable disagreements that come with being a Port Commissioner?
Well, I don't know what you really mean by that, but you can take a civilized meeting and turn it into a chaos the way it's been, and I'm just a little reluctant to get into any kind of debate on the air when you can ask me the questions direct, and you're also going to ask him the same question, so I don't see, this wasn't supposed to be a debate, I don't think.
Back and forth interview
well,
with each
okay.
of you.
Well, it would have ended up in a debate if you just showed up. So.
Okay. And are you referring to the infighting that has been going on at the Port Commission?
I am.
Can you say a little bit about the climate of those meetings recently, or maybe for some time?
Well, I think the last meeting we had at the Port could be termed the meeting from hell.
Why is that?
Because of disruption and the degrading that Mr. Fulton and Mr. Hunsinger did in regards to our staff and our new attorney. It was disgraceful.
Okay. Now, Mr. Fulton has a campaign page on Facebook, and he has alleged that you come to meetings ill-prepared and without enthusiasm. How do you respond to that?
Much to his surprise, I do my homework before I come to the meeting. I don't need to do it and air it in the public like he does and then try to tear the staff apart. That's not the way you're supposed to conduct a meeting.
What is your position on the Port's nearly $2 million bond measure?
I think it's a necessary thing for the community. It's something that serves the entire county and could benefit any individual at any given time. It's a life-saving thing that we'll have here forever, and I think it's great. You can get somebody from point A, for example, the Columbia Memorial Hospital, to Portland in 22 minutes, whereas it takes at least an hour and a half to 2 hours by ambulance. So
now I want to stop you for just a moment, because you're referring to the construction of a new home, essentially, for the Lifelight Air
right.
Ambulance Service.
Yes.
At the port's southern end.
Yes.
So that the bond would pay for that, as well as, I know, road improvements and some utility improvements.
Yes, infrastructure, additions. Yes.
Okay. Now, Mr. Fulton, as I'm sure you're aware, has said you have a conflict of interest supporting the bond because you have a plane at the airport and the new road that would be constructed would make it that much easier for you to get to your hangar. How do you respond to that?
That's the furthest thing from the truth. Be no way any road would benefit me any different than it is right now. I wouldn't have any need to use any kind of a new road. The one I have is right next to the gate going in anyway, so.
You can get to your plane.
Certainly.
Easy enough as
yes.
it is right now. Okay. Getting on to some more serious questions. How do you tell someone in the southern part of the county or the eastern part of the county that this bond will benefit them?
It already has. You know, the flight service itself, I mean, they have strategic places, for example, in the woods. And there's already history that shows that they actually go right to the woods and get an injured person. And
Lifelight does?
Lifelight does, yes. And they have basically a airborne emergency room built into those helicopters. The people they have on staff there are highly, highly trained EMTs, lifesavers, and they can get those people to the hospital in such short order without running them through the hospital and out. They can take them direct. Okay. And they have performed that already.
Why does Lifelight need a new hangar rather than stay where they are and save taxpayers a considerable amount of money?
Well, there's a multitude of reasons why they can't stay where they're at, because there's multiple safety reasons why that they have to move away from the fuel storage and the cross-traffic with fixed-wing aircraft. Lifelight has achieved a grant from Connect Oregon to build the hangar facilities, and they're matching the 30%, I believe it is, grant money that's coming in for that. But they don't have enough to put in the infrastructure. The infrastructure has never been laid in. If it is, it's old and deteriorated to the point where you can't use it anymore. They had wooden water pipes and drain pipes and stuff like that. So regardless of where they go out there, they're going to have new infrastructure.
Okay. What do you see as the biggest challenges facing the Port District right now, and how would you as a commissioner address them?
Well, I think the thing that's facing the Port now is cooperation and teamwork on the Port Commission itself. We have a staff on board now that's second to none, and we need to give them the tools to work with, provide the policy for them to work with, and let them run the day-to-day operations like they're supposed to.
Is the environment on the commission affecting the staff?
The environment on the commission, yes, it is. It is affecting the staff.
Can you say a bit more?
Certainly. I can sum it up in a few words. Micromanagement. We have two commissioners that think they have to have a blow-by-blow description of everything the staff does and a report at the end of the week, which takes up a considerable amount of time of the staff when they could be doing other things.
Now, those two commissioners would be Steve Fulton and
Bill Hunsinger.
Okay. But shouldn't the commission be kept well-informed of everything that's going on?
They are kept informed.
Okay, so this is going overboard.
This is going
opinion.
Overboard in micromanagement.
Okay. As a port commissioner, what would be your top goal in your new term if you're elected?
Continue to bring the port up. When I went on 4 years ago, the finances of the port was in array. Nobody had any idea where we were at financially. In the last 2.5 years since the new staff has come on board, we now have a financial department that can give you a profit and loss in a financial statement at just about any given time.
And that's with the new director, Jim Knight?
That's correct.
Okay. What kinds of developments would you like to see the port attract?
I'd like to see them attract more labor-intensive industry, provides jobs. That's the name of the game.
Can you be more specific?
Well, there's a lot of things looming out there. We have an airport, we have a terminal facility, and we have Tongue Point on lease, and we're constantly looking for new industries to go in there, new type of jobs, and we're gaining a little bit, but it's slow. It's a slow coming back.
Okay. The Department of Environmental Quality, the state agency, recently fined the port some $69,000 for stormwater seepage into the Columbia River with some copper elements. And the port was not informed, or the commission was not informed before their meeting. It was before it was published in the paper. Do you think that was a good way to handle that issue?
That's not quite the way it was. The violation came long, long time ago, way before we started construction on it, and it's been carried over into the present time. So
okay, and I know that was a concern of Mr. Fulton's, yeah, that he read about the issue, the fine, in the newspaper, rather than being informed about it at the Port Commission meeting.
If he didn't know about it, that's his fault. I did.
So you were well aware,
yeah,
of it before the newspaper
fine
published
coming, yes,
it. Okay. Other goals for yourself as a new port, not a new port commissioner, but a returning port commissioner?
Continue to move forward. It's tough, and every day is a different day, and priorities change almost every day. You know that something's looking a little bit better, but it's a lot of work. You're constantly looking for new industry, new ways to improve the port, that sort of thing.
Okay. Before we started the interview, you were telling me that when you were serving back on the commission in the mid-60s, you were part of getting a very big employer into the area. Could you speak just a minute about that?
Sure. At the time I got elected, the Coast Guard had chosen Astoria as a place to locate, but they didn't have a home at the airport, per se. And Tongue Point was idle at the time. So they went into temporary quarters in one of the old hangars up there, which was highly unsuitable. It was too far away from the instrument facilities at the port of Clatsop County Airport. And Wendell Wyatt, our congressman at the time, I got a call from him because I hadn't even been sworn in on the port yet, and he says, we need some help getting some property at the port for the Coast Guard to locate out there. And between he and I and Bob Chopping and some, we started a public relations campaign, and before you know it, the community was on board, and then my job was to persuade the port to come up with some property for them so that we could get this thing off the ground. And consequently, the port finally went along with giving them, I think, 15 acres for a dollar through an instrument of transfer from the Navy. And today, that facility carries 500 employees and in the community, and it's a stable industry, and they're good citizens. We have very little police work to do as far as the Coast Guard, if any. I don't think there's any to speak of. You never read about a Coast Guardman in trouble here. So if everybody was like that, we wouldn't really need too much of a police force here. So I'm pro-Coast Guard, and I think that it's a very good facility to have in our community, and a very good and a very clean environment to have at the airport. So I'm kind of proud of that achievement. I had a lot to do with it.
Great. Well, thank you. I think we should end on that note because we are pretty much out of time for my interview with Port of Astoria Commissioner Jim Campbell. He is running for re-election for Position 1 on the commission. Thanks for coming into the studio today and speaking about your candidacy, Jim.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Stay tuned, because after a short break, I will be speaking with Mr. Campbell's challenger, Port Commissioner Stephen Fulton. This is Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to a pre-recorded edition of Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. I'm Joan Herman. Before the break, I was speaking with Commissioner Jim Campbell about his candidacy for Position 1 on the Port of Astoria Commission in the May 16th election. In the studio now is Steve Fulton, an Astoria resident who is challenging Campbell. Fulton, a Port Commissioner since 2013, now holds Position 2, but has switched positions for the election, as commission rules allow, in order to run against Campbell. He works as a project manager for Warrenton Fiber and previously served two terms as president of the Warrenton Business Association, a city-appointed commission. Welcome to the studio, Steve.
Well, thank you, Joan. I'm very glad to be here.
I'd like to start by asking you to respond to Jim's challenge or claim that you cannot hold a civil discussion about port issues.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is I've been extremely critical of Jim Campbell and the job he's done as president and treasurer of the Port of Astoria for the last 4 years. We need to have serious debate at our meetings about how we will spend the taxpayers' dollars. The lack of information that's been provided to the commission and staff has been channeled through Mr. Campbell, and I believe the commission has not had adequate information to make decisions. And that's why I chose to run against Jim Campbell.
So you switched positions to run specifically against him?
Yes, I did.
Were you concerned that you would have had a more difficult campaign running against Dirk Roan or Dick Helberg, who are running for your position, Position 2?
Or Mr. Spence or Pat O'Grady? Not necessarily. I just felt that the commission would function better and serve the taxpayers of Clatsop County with my replacement of Jim Campbell.
Okay. What about his charge, though, that you cannot hold a civil discussion or cannot be trusted to hold a civil discussion?
Well, I just really don't have an answer for that other than I've been around this community for a long time. As you pointed out, I served as president of the Warrenton Business Association, was appointed by the city of Warrenton to serve on that seat. And I think that the fact of the matter is Jim is reacting to, my assertions that he has not done his job as a commissioner.
Okay. And what makes you say that he hasn't done his job?
Because the commission, by bylaws, is supposed to receive a weekly packet of information from the staff outlining the important activities that have gone on in the past week. That isn't happening. That hasn't happened regularly for the past 2 years. And the other thing is, treasurer, in our financial statements that I think are inadequate, we receive a narrative. And the narrative has omitted numerous issues, like the stormwater issue that was just in the paper here last week, where we received a fine from the DEQ, and the overage on the processing and building of the stormwater treatment system. The fact that we were using money from a different account to pay for the cost overruns wasn't disclosed to the rest of the commission. And as treasurer, I believe there was a responsibility for Mr. Campbell to tell us about that and the public.
Jim said he was well aware of the fine before it was published in the newspaper.
I had never heard of it. I was shocked when I read about it in the paper. And actually, the Tuesday before, it was brought up in a port commission meeting, and the staff had received it 5 days prior, and it wasn't disclosed to us.
Okay.
That's not right. It's our money. that's being wasted down there by this activity. And it's a serious allegation that the state has made against the Port of Astoria. Negligent and reckless in complying with the stormwater provision.
And the port manager has said that the port is making progress on addressing that issue.
It was supposed to be done in July last year. As the Daily Astorian reported, $750,000 over budget, inoperable, and not compliant with the stormwater requirements that the state has issued to us.
Okay.
This is a serious issue. I mean, it could shut down our cruise ships, our log ships, our whole central terminal. We're exposing ourselves to a large fine. I believe it's $32,500 a day that we could get for not complying with the stormwater.
Okay.
Actually, it's the Clean Water Act.
All right. Thank you. I wanted to address the commission's infighting, and your critics have said that you are at the center of that, and that it really detracts from the important business that the commission needs to do, and also affects staff, creating a toxic environment for them. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, as I just said, the bylaws require certain information be provided to the commission. And that's what the infighting has been about, that two of the commissioners that are in the minority have asked
and
repeatedly for more.
And Bill Hunsinger?
Yes, Bill Hunsinger. But the fact is we've asked for staff reports and adequate financial statements so we understand what's going on.
Okay. Let's talk about the bond measure.
Sure.
The port has a nearly $2 million bond measure before voters, every voter in the county.
Yes.
So what is your position on the bond?
I'm in opposition of the bond. I'm all in favor of LifeFlight. LifeFlight has been at our airport for over a year now.
And would you explain?
They have a facility there where their crew sleeps, and they have a hangar where they hangar their plane. But they would like to build a new hangar. They have approximately $1 million available to them, and the port has agreed to provide them a space to buy or build a hangar. And that's what my position is. We can provide them a place to build a hangar without the bond issue. The Port of Astoria has other issues. We have a purchase of Tongue Point coming in front of us, and we have all these problems down at our main waterfront, specifically the stormwater. That was over $2.2 million that project cost. So now we have to go and see where are we going to pay for the additional funding to get that system compliant. That might be a bond issue. We should be very cautious how we spend the taxpayers' money. That's the decision for the commission, and I don't believe that the Airport Advisory Committee fully investigated all the options as to where we could place LifeLight. And that's why I'm in opposition to the bond issue.
Okay. Jim Campbell said the place where the LifeLight air ambulance is now is not adequate, and the best location would be the southern end of the airport. The winds would be better and safer, and the access to Highway 101 would be much quicker, which, of course, can make a difference when somebody's life is on the line. So, in other words, the port bond measure is needed to move LifeLight into an acceptable home.
The other locations for LifeLight have not been adequately considered. That's my position. It's really a question of, do you want a Cadillac or do you want a Yugo? I believe, as a taxpayer, that we can build a facility that's more than adequate for them right where they are now, are in that general area, not at their existing location, but near there, that will work. And the reason I can say that is they're there now.
Okay.
Yep.
You have been at the center of the so-called man cave controversy.
Sure.
Involving retired dentist Philip Dick Bales'
sure.
hangar. And you've accused him of running an unlicensed speakeasy.
Sure.
Why did you make such an allegation?
Well, if you read the lease that Mr. Bales has, where he pays about $137 a month to the port, it requires our spiculous. We can start over. Can I try that word again?
That's okay.
Mr. Bales' lease specifies certain uses that are acceptable there. The storage of airplanes and aviation-related materials. Anything else is not approved by the lease.
Okay, but the words in unlicensed speakeasy suggest something illegal.
Well,
and violating liquor laws.
Well, or violating zoning. It's an industrial zone. The amount of alcohol that's on site there led me to believe that it is more than just a casual use.
Okay. But I believe the Liquor Control Commission determined that they were not violating any state liquor use laws.
I don't know that.
Okay. All right. What other concerns do you have about the port that you would like to address?
Well, I'll tell you what the one thing that I would really like to see, and this is going to probably surprise everybody, is that I think the port has a function in the community more than just providing jobs that we do a good job at. We have close to 2,000 jobs that we create at our facilities.
And would you explain what those are for people who
Well, the majority of the jobs there there's four canneries at the – well, let me start over with that. I have to go back. A couple of the canneries have closed.
That's okay.
We have canneries at Tongue Point and Bornstein and Dayang at our main terminal, and we have a seafood market over by the Riverwalk Inn. Those are the primary employers at the facility.
Okay.
We also have England Marine and numerous smaller businesses located in the Palmberg and Knessa buildings, plus we have office buildings at two spaces down there.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Getting back to the environment, the climate on the Port Commission itself,
sure.
How can a Port Commission function if it is fighting with one another? What would you do?
Well, right now we're rewriting our bylaws to address some of those situations, and I just feel that as an elected official, when I was elected, I read the bylaws for the Port of Astoria, and I expect the other commissioners to follow the current set of bylaws. If we change the bylaws, those are the bylaws that I would agree to follow, and there's procedures for everything that should be addressed in our public meetings within those bylaws.
Okay.
Sure. And the one thing I'd like to say is that we got off the question there. What goes on at the Port of Astoria and what I would really like to see down there. As part of this stormwater plan, we had to lease some property from the state of Oregon. And one of the issues that Astoria has, I think there are more dogs in Astoria than there are children. And what I would really like to see the port do is work with the city of Astoria to develop a dog park. I've talked to Arlene Lemire, our mayor, about this issue.
So that's kind of off the port.
Well, it really isn't. It really isn't. We provide a lot of tourist services. We have the largest hotel in Astoria and cruise ships.
Riverwalk Inn?
Yes. Cruise ships, when they come into town here, a lot of those people that are tourists come back again. And I know from talking to my sister, who lives up in Seattle, when she comes down here, quite often she brings her dog with her and she stops in Longview. And I really believe that would be something where the port could work with the city and try and find a location to do that. And that's been one of the things that I've really tried to do in an informal basis. And, you know, another example might be the OSU building, which is the building next to the East End Causeway. I believe that's on 36th Street. And Port has a revisionary clause on that building, and it is in legal dispute right now. But if we ever get that building back, I would think that the front yard next to the fish cleaning station at the East End Mooring Basin would be a fabulous place for a dog park.
Okay. All right. So put the dog park on port property itself.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you yourself have a dog?
Yes, I do. I have a golden doodle. Her name is Shu Mao.
Okay. All right. Any other ideas that you would like to tackle if you are reelected?
Well, I have mentioned a future bond. I believe that the Port of Astoria should move its main facility up to Tongue Point. However, in the meantime...
From the west end of town.
Yes, from the west end of town, so that we would be more compatible with what's going on in the city of Astoria. The Morosi plan for developing the waterfront. You know, maybe we should consider going back to that, but in order to do that, we need to have a place for our main heavy industry, which is log ships and even the possibility of the cruise ships. I doubt that the cruise ships would ever move, but I've always envisioned that the East End Mooring Basin would be a great site on the face of the mooring basin to dock the cruise ships. And the other thing is, though, our main jobs are protecting our existing infrastructure and compliance with the regulations.
Okay.
We cannot continue to pollute the Columbia River. We have to focus on getting our stormwater clean and making sure that we're compliant with the Clean Water Act.
Okay, thank you. I'm afraid that is all we have time for in the first half hour of this special one-hour election edition. I want to thank my guest, Steve Fulton, for coming into the studio and speaking about his candidacy.
Well, thank you, Joan. I'm very happy to be here.
Steve Fulton is attempting to unseat Position 1 incumbent Jim Campbell on the Port of Astoria Commission in the May 16th election. Earlier, I spoke with Mr. Campbell. Commission positions are not geography-specific, so voters countywide can cast ballots in all the races, as well as on the bond measure. The Port District, as I just mentioned, covers the entire county and manages the port itself on Astoria's west end, two mooring basins in Astoria, the Tongue Point Industrial Area on Astoria's east end, and the Astoria Regional Airport in Warrenton. Besides electing three port commissioners, voters also will decide the fate of the port's nearly $2 million bond measure for improvements at the airport. Don't go away, though. Coming up in the second half hour of the show is a live interview with candidates running for the Board of Directors of the Clatsop Cares Health District, incumbent Mike Aho and challenger Jacqueline Devaney. This is Perspectives on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. I'm Joan Herman. In the studio now are candidates for Position 3 on the Clatsop Cares Health District's Board of Directors, incumbent Mike Aho and challenger Jacqueline Devaney. Formed in 1987, the publicly funded health district covers much of the county except for Gearhart, Seaside, and Cannon Beach. So voters in all parts of the other parts of the county will be able to cast ballots in the two contested races for the district's board. The healthcare district operates the county's only nursing home located in Astoria, as well as an assisted living facility also in Astoria and a memory care facility in Warrenton. It also provides in-home care throughout the district. And by the way, the interview with candidates in the other contested race for the district's board is available by podcast on the station's website. Position 3 incumbent Mike Aho of Warrenton was appointed to the board last year to fill a vacancy. The Astoria native is a retired grocer and former co-owner with his wife Tammy of the Main Street Market in Warrenton. Challenger Jacqueline Devaney is a registered nurse with experience in home health care and as a clinical coordinator at a dialysis facility. She is a relatively new transplant to the North Coast. Welcome to the studio, Mike and Jacqueline.
Thank you, Joan. Thank you, KMUN and Jackie, for being here.
Yeah, thank you all for having us.
I'd like to start by having each of you take a couple minutes to explain why you are running for the Board of Directors. Jacqueline, maybe we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, I first became interested in the board when I heard that the Clatsop Care Center was struggling. I had one patient in particular that was directly affected by this, her and her family, and I can't go into any further detail than that, but that's when I became concerned and I started doing some research to learn more about the board and what the board was responsible for. So I just want to offer my experience as a nurse and as a clinical coordinator, which is a type of nurse manager, to help guide the district in a position where it's not facing, hopefully, as many challenges as it currently is.
Okay, and I assume, was she living at the care center?
No, she was trying to get placement into the care center and was unable. And so she and her family she had to go to a different facility, which was far away.
And oh, okay.
Her family had difficulties with transportation.
Okay. All
so
right.
She became isolated, unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you. Mike?
About the same story, I became very interested about the same time when I heard my father was a resident at the care center when I received a notice to all family members that they were going to reduce the census, and there was the possibility in the long term that the care center could be closed down. So I went to that family meeting, and that just kind of got the juices flowing. So I started to attend some board meetings and started asking some questions and digging into financials. And then when Karen resigned from the board. Nancy Winters resigned from the board. I threw my hat in the ring and was interviewed for the position and appointed to that. So it was virtually the same story. I became interested when I heard of the financial difficulties that the district was in.
Okay, so you have a very personal connection to the district itself.
Yes.
Well, getting on to my next question then, which relates to that, and Jacqueline, we'll start with you again. What experience in professional or personal qualities do you bring to the position?
Well, I've been nursing for over 6 years. I have my bachelor's science in nursing, along with working in home health and also as a clinical coordinator for a dialysis facility. I've also worked on medical surgical units in a large hospital. So I feel like I have experience with patients and the challenges that they go through. And on the other hand of that, I also have experience with Medicare and Medicaid requirements and the financial issues that can arise from those requirements and how to navigate that. I also care deeply about the people in this community. In my time here, I've gotten to meet so many wonderful, caring, considerate, kind people. Mm-hmm. And I want to advocate for them. And I want to make sure that when the time comes that they need to use these facilities, that they'll receive the best care possible.
Okay. Mike?
On a personal level, my experience with the care district started about 5 years ago when my parents needed some help, and in-home care was brought in to help them at home. Like all of us, my parents just wanted to age in place and stay home.
And for people who aren't familiar with in-home care, what does that mean?
You basically hire some assistants for as little or as much time during the day as you want. It could go up to 24 hours a day of care. We originally started trying to break the ice with like 4 hours every 3 days to help clean, do some cooking, some shopping. And that evolved into more and more hours. And then, unfortunately, my mother had dementia, and it just wasn't working for her there. So they evolved over to the assisted living facility for a while. And once again, unfortunately, dementia, it was not working there. So my mother had to go to a memory care facility. The one that the district now operates was not open at that time, so she ended up somewhere else. In the meantime, my father's health kind of went downhill, and he ended up at the care center. So I've kind of had an experience in all four aspects of the district's caring. And over those 4.5 years, I became involved in their finances, obviously. I wrote checks, as of this point, up to $400,000 total to the care district for their care. So
wow.
I've kind of got a dog in the fight, per se. Unfortunately, now they are broke. My mother's passed away, and my father's on Medicaid. So I understand the transition from private pay, the Medicare, and now how to get into Medicaid and what that involves and the reimbursement rates. On a professional level, I bring 25 years as a small business owner. I'm well aware of financials, budgets, and how to look at them and help the district on that level.
Okay, thank you. The big issue probably facing the district is that as of April 1st, a private healthcare management company, Aiden of Salem, is now managing the care center's facilities, the care district's facilities, all of them, as well as the in-home care. And that has had some controversy. So
Mike, why did the district's board make that decision to turn over management to a private company?
When Nicole Williams gave her notice that she was leaving as CEO of the district, that was approximately January 1st. She gave us about 60 days until March 1st to find an individual as CEO for the district in that short time frame would be a challenge. The bigger challenge was the dire financial state that the district was in, with approximately 6 more months of money starting at January 1st before payrolls probably couldn't be met. So we needed to find someone or an entity that could come in with the expertise and background to turn this ship around in a short period of time. And we interviewed 3 different companies, and Aiden was far and above the best choice, in our opinion, for the district.
And what stood out about that company for the board?
They have nurse consultants in the company. They have turned other districts around. They come highly recommended. One district that we did talk to fired them. After they had turned everything around and it was profitable, the board decided we don't need you anymore, and they put in their own CEO. And my personal thought is I would love in 2 years or a year and a half to revisit their contract, and if they've got us on sound financial footings, then we bring in our own CEO again. That's just my opinion, though.
Okay. All right. Jacqueline, what are your thoughts on the decision to privatize management?
From everything I've heard, it sounds like the board was in an extremely difficult, challenging position. And I feel like they made the best decision to their knowledge. What concerns me about this particular company is their management of Nehalem Valley Care Center, which is a 2 out of 5 star facility.
And that's in Nehalem?
That's in Nehalem, that's correct. It's a what we called a skilled nursing facility and also a rehab facility. So 2 out of 5 stars, that's designated by Medicare, and it's available online for people to look up and to look into why that...
Is that Medicare's rating?
Yes.
Of the facility. So 2 out of 5 doesn't sound very good.
Yes. And what is especially concerning to me is part of the reason they're only a 2 out of 5 star facility is because they've only achieved a 1 star out of 5 star rating for at least the past 2 years on their health inspection reports. And in 2015, they even had to pay a fine for issues with that health inspection report to Medicare. So perhaps financially, they might be able to bring in revenue, but my concern is the effect that may occur with quality of care. And that will actually in turn affect finances and revenue as well, because almost every healthcare facility, its main reimbursement is from Medicare. And Medicare bases that reimbursement on those star ratings. So if a facility has a low star rating, they'll receive less reimbursement from Medicare. So in short, I'm not sure how effective that financial gain might be, especially if it affects the quality of care in our county to our families and friends and neighbors. I have heard that one of the first decisions Aiden made with Clatsop Care was to increase patient census, which is really good because we want to keep our friends and family in the county so we can get more
patients in the beds at the care center.
Yes, but at the same time, they reduced certain staff members. And so that puts an additional strain on the current staff to provide safe quality care and can increase chances of burnout, which can increase the chances that staff turnover may be higher. And it I'm just concerned that it may have a snowball effect.
Okay. Well, Mike, getting back to the contract, what safeguards are in place within the contract itself to protect patient safety and care?
Within the contract? I don't have it right in front of me, Joan. Patient safety and care, whether it is a private management company such as Aiden or a hired CEO, is no different to the board. There are safeguards in place, maybe not as great as there should be. There are state surveys. There is the staff. There is the client or patient. And there's also the family that is watching all the time. And also there's eyes on the board that are in the facilities. My father's in a facility. I go into the facility.
Is he in the care center now?
He is now over at CRV.
CRV is
the retirement village
on Young's Bay. Okay. And I know you do have a 2-year contract signed with Aiden, but the board does have an option of canceling it sooner if there are serious problems.
Yes, and also if Aiden does not turn the district financially around, the contract is void because we cannot pay them and they will quit.
And okay. I do have the contract in front of me, and that,
okay, Jacqueline.
That is included, yeah.
Okay.
So they've got about 3 months left to turn it around.
Okay. And at the end of 3 months is the start of your new fiscal year, is that correct?
Yes, July 1st. And I don't know the exact date when money's gone. There are things that could be done. You could talk to the vendors and ask for an extra 15 days to increase cash flow. There are things that could happen, but when the money's gone, it's gone, and we can't pay Aiden for their services.
And why is the district in such dire straits financially?
Well, I've only been on the board for about 6-7 months. There are things that happened in the past that I'm not privy to. A lot of it in the last year has been state mandates and state rules. The memory care took a big hit when a survey came in and they demanded that nurse consultants be hired to fix these things. They could not bring in any new clients, no more admissions. That was about $250,000 cost to the district from out of pocket, and then lost revenues because it could no admissions. That was expensive. Of course, anytime you're building a new facility such as a memory care, there's cost overruns and there's time overruns, and money is going out, but it didn't open as soon as the district had hoped it would open. And then the main thing that's really happened is that the skilled nursing facility, Clatsop Care, has been a reduction in skilled admissions. And the skilled admissions are the rehabs, the 2 weeks after a knee surgery. Mm-hmm. That's Medicare reimbursed, and that's at a higher rate.
Those must still be happening, so I'm wondering why would those admissions be declining?
They're not happening around here locally as much as they were.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of Aiden's goals, is to get those patients that maybe are going to the Portland Metro or the Longview area to do their rehabilitation at Clatsop Care.
Okay. All right. Jacqueline, as a board member, what would you do to ensure that patient care and safety is maintained?
Well, regular follow-up with that management company to ensure that they're making the best decisions for the patients and for the district. I also think the best recent research has shown that the best patient outcomes result from a paradigm known as patient-centered care, which on an individual basis means that each healthcare provider focuses on the patient's goals, what the patient wants to achieve, involve families in decision-making versus the healthcare provider telling them what they need to do. On a broader basis, what this could mean is bringing in families and patients to board meetings. The board does a great job of maintaining a website to notify of when future board meetings will take place. I'm not sure if all families and patients have internet access to check on that website. So I think sending out regular letters and notifications. also a barrier to patients and families and other community members participating in the board meetings is that they occur on Tuesdays at noon. Most other boards in the county have evening schedules so that the broader community can attend those board meetings. So I think changing the time to the evening would help so that family members who work, for example, can come to those board meetings and voice their concerns and be able to participate in the decision-making process of the board and of the management company. I know that recently more people have been attending those board meetings, and I think that's absolutely wonderful. And I hope to continue to increase participation. I myself haven't been able to go to board meetings, unfortunately. I've had to follow minutes and ask other people what's going on because of my work schedule. So,
okay.
I would agree. Evening meetings would be more conducive to attendance. There have been, since I've been on the board, there have been two evening meetings. Most of them have been at noon, though.
Okay. I want to get back to the private management company, Aiden. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but the board is paying Aiden in the neighborhood of $35,000 a month?
It's based on revenue, so that can fluctuate. But yes, based on the previous year, that would be approximately the money.
Okay. All right. And some people might be wondering, how can you afford to pay this company that much if, on the other hand, the district is facing this large debt?
It's a good question. We are hoping that the combination of increased census, which has already happened, and a little bit of belt tightening and looking at all expenditures, that they are going to free up that $35,000 plus an additional approximately $60,000 to bring us even. The goal of the district is not to lose a dime and not to make a dime. And then hopefully we could use the timber revenue and tax revenue as capital for improving facilities, maybe building a new facility, raising the rates of our CNAs, hourly rates, to retain them in the district and to attract more employees.
Because I understand that care facilities, not just here but elsewhere, have trouble attracting CNAs just because of the low pay, very hard work.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's a constant battle, and right now we would like to up the employees at the care center to add an additional 7 residents. We have employees for 28, and the census was, prior to Aiden, approximately 22 residents. It bumped up to 28. It's kind of fluctuated between 26 and 28 just because of admissions and discharges. But the next step is to get up to 35.
Okay.
But we need the personnel to do it.
Okay. All right. And you mentioned timber and tax revenues. So the care district does receive timber revenues, as do a number of other taxing districts in the county.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And I'm just curious, what have you seen? How is the quality of care that your folks have received from the care district?
Excellent. It's tough to see everything they work so hard for. They lived a very simple life. You know, blue-collar workers, save, scrimped. It was tough to spend that money, but the quality of care that they've received was great. I have nothing but accolades. Yeah, there's been a couple bumps in the road on situations over 5 years, which you're going to have in anything. But my mother received excellent care up to the day that she passed away at the care center. And my dad has actually thrived at the care center to the point that he decided, I don't need this level of care anymore. I'm going to go to CRV and have my own apartment.
The retirement village,
yeah,
the assisted living
place. Yeah, it's just the
place.
Opposite of how things usually happen. My dad thrived so well up there with the care that he's now kind of semi-independent.
That's great.
Yes. That is great.
Yeah. Well, and Jacqueline, what have been your impressions of the care with the district itself?
So far, my impressions have been very positive. I haven't been able to visit the care center directly, but from people who I've heard who've interacted with Clatsop Care Center, they all say that they've received excellent care. And I have been able to visit the retirement village, and I've always been really impressed. I see patients there who are smiling and participating in activities, and the employees there usually seem pretty pleasant. They're not pulling their hair out, which is a really good sign. So I've been impressed. I hope to continue to interact with all of the entities that the health district provides care through. And I hope that all of the facilities continue to provide excellent care and perhaps even improve. I think that also asking for increased staff and participation in board meetings can help with the decision-making processes to improve care even more.
Okay. So. Is there room for the district to increase services? And it may seem premature to be asking that when the district is trying to get itself on the right, a level foot, financially speaking. But are there services that are in demand that we don't provide?
Yes. Right now, the district is working on Medicaid reimbursement for in-home care. That is a large, untapped population that wants to stay age in place at home but doesn't have the funding to pay for it, and Medicaid can reimburse the district for that service. I believe there's, of course, the census that we want to increase at the care center. We're licensed, I believe, for 71 beds, and approximately 26 are being used right now. The memory care facility has room for expansion as far as census, and the district is looking into that right now.
And how many residents are there now?
22, I believe, as of this week, Tuesday. Hoping to get it, once again, it kind of goes in numbers of seven. I think it's seven or six out there. So I think it can go up to 28 is with the next goal out
okay.
there.
Okay,
and
that's
I'm not positive of that number, though.
It's fairly new, isn't it?
Yes, yes. It opened, I believe, May of last year.
Okay.
Yes.
So not just a year.
It's a beautiful facility, too.
Jacqueline, do you see any services that aren't being offered that you think would really be important for the district to provide?
I have to think on that one for a moment. So, the district provides crucial services. Other services are also provided by other entities within the community. I think, as Mike said, the main focus should be on getting the district out of the red, and then perhaps exploring opportunities for additional services. That would put the district in competition with other providers in the area, but if they're able to do it in a the right way, then that might be a good thing for the community as a whole.
Okay. I think we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time today, but I want to thank my guests, incumbent Mike Aho and challenger Jacqueline Devaney, who are running for position 3 on the Clatsop Care Health District's Board of Directors in the May 16th election. Incumbent Mike Aho of Warrenton is seeking his first full term on the board after being appointed to fill a vacancy last year. The Astoria native is a retired grocer and former co-owner of the Main Street Market in Warrenton. Challenger Jacqueline Devaney is a registered nurse with experience in home health care and as the clinical coordinator of a dialysis facility. The publicly funded health district covers much of Clatsop County, excluding Gearhart, Seaside, and Cannon Beach. It operates the county's only nursing home, as well as an assisted living facility and a memory care facility. It also provides in-home care throughout the district. If you live outside the South County area and are registered to vote, you most likely will be able to cast ballots in the two contested races for the district's Board of Directors. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Coming up next Friday on another one-hour edition of Perspectives,
will be interviews with candidates in the two contested races for the Astoria School Board in the May election. Perspectives is heard on the stations of Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, or streaming live at coastradio.org. You also can find podcasts of the shows on the station's website. Thanks for listening.